Do you need a break?
You read my mind.
Come with me.
A little bit later than usual, but here is your episode of The Break for this week. I'm Father Roderick. I'm a priest and I'm a geek. I love to share with you everything I know about movies, TV shows, board games, video games, and so much more. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. I'm recording this days after my normal recording date. Normally, I try to record this in the beginning of the week on Monday. So I record The Break in the afternoon and then the walk after lunch. So I know that for the rest of the week, I can focus on all my other work. But for some reason, I wasn't able to get this out there on Monday. And then the week just kept getting busier and busier. And so ultimately, I'm recording this on Sunday afternoon. It is right now 3:22 p.m. So my apologies to all of you who expected this episode to drop a little bit earlier. I hope you still enjoy it. And then there will be another episode, of course, next week, which is Holy Week. Actually, has already started because I'm recording this on Palm Sunday. But we'll focus more on the Triduum and on the Easter celebrations in next week's episode. So let's waste no more time and let's talk Star Wars.
A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away.
Well, we got another live trailer for an upcoming television series that we are going to be able to see on Disney Plus. And this one has been announced more than a year ago. I remember that some of my friends were talking about having seen the trailer during the Star Wars celebration in London. I was not among the happy few who were able to go to that panel, but everybody said it's so amazing. It's very different from Star Wars as we've seen it so far. And so I was very happy that a year later we finally got to see what they got to see. They modified the trailer just a tiny little bit. There are a few new shots in there, but most of the trailer was what they showed on the Star Wars celebration. I don't know why they do this. They did the same thing, I think, for The Bad Batch, where they showed it at Star Wars celebration, and only a couple of hundred people are able to see it. Why don't you just put it up on YouTube so that everyone can start getting excited about this? I don't know, maybe part of the way in which Disney is doing their marketing. But anyway, I'm happy that we have a trailer now, and you may be familiar with the setting. This is happening like a few centuries before the prequels. So this is an era in the Star Wars history that we've never seen before. It is part of the so-called High Republic, and you may have heard me talk about the books and the comics that are dedicated to that era. I'm not very familiar with it. I tried to read the first book, and then just after a few attempts, I just couldn't get through it. I do have the audiobook now, which is absolutely a much better experience than trying to read the book. And I read a number of comics that take place in the High Republic era, but they didn't really appeal to me. I hear from many Star Wars fans that it is absolutely worth putting some effort in. It's a very interesting time frame, because this is at the height of the Jedi. This is like the golden era of the Jedi. And yet, of course, for every good story, you need villains, you need a threat, you need something that the Jedi need to deal with. And so in The Acolyte, this is going to focus on people that are not among the Jedi, and it's going to show the Star Wars universe from a different perspective. And so let's take a look at the trailer once more. I already posted a reaction video on my YouTube channel, but it never hurts to watch a Star Wars trailer multiple times.
Close your eyes. Your eyes can deceive you. We must not trust them.
This is what Obi-Wan Kenobi tells Luke in The Millennium Falcon in A New Hope.
Tell me what comes into your mind.
Life. Balance. I see fire.
Thank you.
sound design of
someone's
this trailer
killing
is
Jedi.
Awesome.
It doesn't make sense. What happened?
I sensed darkness.
This isn't about good or bad. This is about power and who is allowed to use it.
What is that?
It's a red lightsaber. The Acolyte, this will premiere in June. June the 4th, we're going to get a two-episode premiere, and I'm super excited about this. This looks amazing. As usual today with Star Wars, whenever Disney is giving us information about something that they're working on in the realm of Star Wars, there are a lot of, I don't know, I don't call them Star Wars fans anymore, but a lot of people that are always trying to put all their hatred of Star Wars on the internet for some reason. So there was a massive campaign against this trailer where there were certain, you know, big creators on the internet that encouraged their followers to massively downvote this trailer. But Disney issued a press release, I think, saying that this trailer broke just all records. And so I think we'll just, at this point, we'll just have to shrug whenever something of Star Wars is in the news. You always have this army of I don't know what motivates these people to be so negative, and they hate it. I'm thinking you just go watch something else, you know? Anyway, I hope that my YouTube channel can be a safe place for Star Wars fans. I don't have any tolerance for that kind of negativity. And personally, I'm really looking forward to this story. It looks very different. It does have, of course, a lot of elements from the Star Wars that we know and love. You see the Jedi Temple. You see these younglings being trained in the ways of the Force. There are some really interesting fight scenes in there. I like the sound design of this trailer as well, so I'm curious to discover what kind of composer they put on this. At first, when I saw the trailer, in my immediate commentary after watching it for the first time, I said, it looks like not everything was filmed in the volume. I just assumed that they used the volume, which is this big, you know, virtual set that they've used ever since they started filming The Mandalorian. You could clearly tell that for some scenes they were filming outside. It turns out they didn't use the volume at all. And I think that's a great thing, because I hope that the volume will be used in the future not to cut costs or save on, I don't know, travel costs or production costs. It has a tendency to make things look too artificial. That was my biggest issue that I had with Obi-Wan Kenobi, even though I love the series as a whole. But there were so many moments in the Obi-Wan Kenobi TV series where you could tell that this was not filmed on a real set. It was inside the volume, and a lot of the background was filmed, was created artificially. And it detracts. You start to recognize it, that it's not real. And one of the most refreshing Star Wars series that we've seen in previous years was Andor, and a lot of Andor was filmed in Scotland, was filmed outside, and you feel it feels much more real. There was a real big town set that was built outside a studio, so it's when it's raining, and when there's mud on the floor, it's real mud. And that's the kind of stuff that Star Wars, I think, needs, because from the first movie on, it was this gritty, used universe. And this grittiness of reality is, I think, an integral part of what makes Star Wars feel like Star Wars. And so I'm very happy to hear that for this series, they didn't use the volume. It's most of what we're going to see was on set, of course, enhanced by the wonderful ILM wizardry. But I'm of course, very curious, because the writer and main, was it the, like the showrunner, she has created Russian Doll, which was a quite incredible, I think a Netflix series, incredibly well written. And she hired another writer who, when she started to work on the script for The Acolyte, admitted that she had never seen Star Wars before. And I personally think that that is very beneficial. It's good for Star Wars. I actually advocated for this a couple of months ago when I was commenting on the rut that Marvel seems to be in and Star Wars seemed to be heading in the same direction. It's like you need new blood. You need new storytellers. You need people from outside. This is what made Andor so great. The people who created Andor were not into Star Wars. At least, you know, to them, it was just a universe in which you could tell a good story, but it was all about the quality of the story. And I think what weakens both Marvel and Star Wars is when they do too much fan service. And even though I have an immense admiration for Dave Filoni and Jon Favreau and what they brought to the Star Wars narrative, it also has a downside. These people know Star Wars so well that everything that they create feels sometimes a bit too familiar. It's too predictable to a certain extent. And so I am very happy to see that Disney is taking risks with these new series. And I hope they will continue to be rewarded for that. Andor was proof that it works to bring in quality writers and to focus on the story and not just on the nostalgia, even though that is, of course, a huge temptation. This is where a lot of movies nowadays go wrong. I heard some reviews of the new Ghostbusters movie. You know how much I'm a Ghostbusters fan. And apparently this last movie, it was all a bit nostalgia, fan pandering, and the story itself is just not very good, which breaks my heart because, come on, we've seen so many bad sequels and studios can make a lot of money if they just hire good writers. This is what the whole writer strike was about, right? It's to value the contribution that writers bring to the entire production. It's not just about special effects and hiring, you know, big name actors. If the story is bad, you can hire the best actors in the world and it still will be a bad movie. But if you have great writers and just unknown actors, this can be a surprise hit. And I hope that Disney will continue to experiment with this and that other studios will follow suit. All right, speaking of good writing, there is an amazing story. It's a Chinese science fiction series, The Three Body Problem, that it was extremely well reviewed. It won the Hugo Award. And after many years, there's a lot of this is very, very interesting and also a little bit of a shocking backstory. Like the guy who originally wanted to create the movie got poisoned. And there, oh man, just look it up. It's insane. But we finally do have a Netflix series based on The Three Body Problem. I've seen the first two episodes. They put the whole season on Netflix in one go, so you can binge watch it, which for me, I wish they would stop doing that because I just don't like the pressure of having that entire series to watch. I'd rather just watch one episode every week and be able to talk about it here on the show. But I've watched the first two episodes and it is amazing. It is such a good story. And it shows also the revolution, the communist revolution in China from, I think, a very revealing side. And in the book, this is much more kind of hidden, more. It's not as explicit, but in the television series, they show the brutal side of that revolution. And so apparently this series created a lot of upheaval in communist China. They didn't like it at all. But let's take a look at the trailer here and then I'll talk some more.
I have to tell you something. Something insane. But true. About all of us. It started a long time ago.
Back in 1977, they detected a sequence. Called it the WOW signal.
What's it say? They are coming.
Who are they?
That's the question, right? Oh, hello, darling.
When your consciousness ends in one world, it could continue to exist in many other worlds.
What do you think is happening?
I think we're at war.
How will you be remembered?
I'm someone who fought back.
This bitter earth.
The Three Body Problem. It is available on Netflix, and I can highly recommend it. The production value of this series is insanely good. It's so beautifully filmed. The special effects are amazing. The acting is really good. And the story, it gripped me right from the get-go. So this is, obviously, you can deduce that from the trailer, about an alien invasion. And in the book, I read the first, or at least part of the first book, it's a very complicated story, and there's so many different levels, and it makes your head spin. So I was interested to see how they would translate this to TV series. They did a very good job. They changed a lot, but it becomes much easier to follow. And so part of the story takes place in the 60s during the Communist Revolution in China and the aftermath of that. And then a lot happens in our time in 2024. And what happens is that there are certain people that for some reason at one point start to see this countdown. Wherever they look, there's this weird like sequence of numbers and it's counting down. And then they get visited by people, we don't know exactly, and the thing is they are invisible to everyone else, and these people tell them, hey, you have to stop developing this or this technology, otherwise when the counter reaches zero, it's not going to end well for you. And some people actually kill themselves, and some actually do stop to do their research or whatever, develop their stuff. And this is so fascinating. And then there's this other story about a virtual reality device. So it's very topical now with all the, you know, Apple Vision Pro, but this is like the Apple Vision Pro from the year 3000. And so it's this extremely like sci-fi looking headset that you put on and then you're plunged into another reality. It's so real that you can feel it. You are there. But it's this weird game that is so outlandish and so strange. And this is what I loved about the series, about the first two episodes. You can't stop watching. You're like, what is going on? At one point, they go outside, or one of the characters goes outside, and the entire sky, with all the stars, is flickering on and off. Like in sequence, there's a sequence. It's as if the heavens are blinking to her, which of course is like astronomically impossible. And so again, you're like, what is going on? And you want to know. So I can't stop watching this and knowing that, of course, the entire story originally was three novels. I hope that we get to see multiple seasons. This is an amazing series, one of the best science fiction series currently on TV. So if you have Netflix, definitely check it out. And then I went back to much more classic sci-fi. So I'm still watching Deep Space Nine, and I'm currently in the fifth season. Almost done with the fifth season, and I just watched another episode, which was actually quite similar to the theme of the Three Body Problem. in that there is this very scary, strange, ethereal, non-corporeal alien race that somehow tries to influence what's happening on Deep Space Nine. And so the story is O'Brien is on Deep Space Nine, and his wife, Keiko, is out for some offshore leave or whatever. She's on a short vacation, and when she comes back, it's no longer Keiko. She looks and talks like Keiko, but she's now possessed by an evil spirit, and she threatens to kill Keiko unless O'Brien does exactly what she orders him to do. And so O'Brien now starts to sabotage the ship or the station. And for a long time, you wonder, well, what's going on? And it's so creepy. And it's very creepy because actually at one point, the spirit is actually trying to kill Keiko. And I was a bit shocked to see that in Star Trek. You don't expect that kind of storyline, at least I didn't. And then poor O'Brien, this is just one of those O'Brien must suffer episodes. Like every time he's the main character of a series, he's suffering. There was this other episode, I think this was also in the fifth season, where he is in a sort of jail. But at the same time, this is all happening in his mind. But he is in jail for years and years and years. But in the real world, no time seems to have passed. But when he comes out of that jail inside his mind, he has suffered all the trauma from that prison time. And it's just so cruel, and it's so, you really pity O'Brien. And for some reason, they always seem to target him. Now, I've heard that this whole plotline, this is the first episode that we hear of these evil spirits and how they are trying to, well, it has to do with the whole wormhole that is close to Deep Space Nine. I won't spoil it if you haven't seen it yet. And apparently this will become a much more important plot line later on in the series. But they didn't plan for this. This interesting thing here is that you see, if you read about how these episodes came about, that a lot of times they just came up with this idea, and it's only much later on in a subsequent season that they thought, hey, we might revisit this, or we might take this element and start building upon it. And this is, of course, something that happens a lot in television series, where at the end, we as viewers, we think, oh, it was all planned in advance, but that's rarely the case. Well, for Babylon 5, of course, that was all completely pre-planned. But most of the time, especially for these series that have to be renewed every season, they make it up as they go. You know, Battlestar Galactica, Lost is another great example. People complain about the way Lost ended. I was like, I'm amazed that they were even able to come up with an ending, because when they were creating Lost, they didn't even know if it would get beyond one season. And so they came up with all these things. They didn't really have a solution or an explanation for what they put in the show. And they just thought, well, as long as we can keep this ship afloat, we'll figure it out later. And so at the end, they had to somehow resolve the story. And of course, they couldn't, because there were so many mysteries in every episode. But I like that. I really enjoy it when, especially in the commentaries, you hear how they just sometimes painted themselves into a corner, and they had to come up with some way to propel the story forward. This happened also with Battlestar Galactica. Ronald D. Moore recorded a ton of audio commentaries on every episode, and he admits it. And he says, this is just how I work, as we make it up as we go. And also for Battlestar Galactica, the way they ended it, some fans didn't like it at all. I thought it was masterful. It was like, how can you come up with such an ending? It is so brilliant. And I love it, because this is just associative thinking. This is creative thinking. It's almost like improv, but then in television series. And that always keeps me on the edge of my seat. So really enjoying Deep Space Nine right now. I'm going to power through. I want to watch the entire series before I go back to Babylon 5. That's another series that I've never finished. for Babylon 5. I hope to one day be able to buy the Blu-ray, the new Blu-ray box in which they upsampled the entire series, so I can watch it in better quality than the DVD that I have. But first, I want to finish Deep Space Nine. Oh, and another thing that is really cool is that they finally put Discovery up on Sky Showtime. Sky Showtime is the European equivalent of Paramount Plus, and so it was supposed to have all the Star Trek, but it didn't, because there was Star Trek a bit everywhere. Prime had some Star Trek for a long time. Netflix had a lot of Star Trek. I still think that Deep Space Nine, I'm watching it on Netflix, because the version they have on Sky Showtime is horrible. It's out of sync. They did some kind of weird conversion where the image is super jittery. The colors and the contrast is better than the Netflix version, but all the rest, it looks like an upsampled, like, low-resolution version. It's insane. And back in the day, you could complain about that on Twitter, and they would read it. But now that Twitter is abandoned by so many big companies for good reasons, I wonder where I can complain. It's just insane that such a great series just didn't get any quality check before they put it up on Sky Showtime. But I am super happy that they at least put Discovery on there, so I can now watch the fourth season, which I haven't seen yet, and the fifth season. Once it premieres, it's also going to be on Showtime right away, so I'll be able to finally, for the first time in my life, like, watch Star Trek right each week with the rest of the world. For almost everything else, we had to wait before we could watch it. Maybe the second season of Strange New Worlds. I think that one also premiered simultaneously in the US and over here in Europe. But anyway, Discovery is not my favorite Star Trek series, but it's still Star Trek. I still like it. There's a lot that I love about it, and also a lot of stuff that I don't care that much for. But it's like, with Star Trek, it's similar as with Star Wars. In general, I do just enjoy being in that universe. Ghostbusters, same thing. Even if the new movie is maybe not as good as everybody hoped, I still like to be back in New York. And I'm about to build the Lego set of the fire station, and so I'm very much in a Ghostbusters mood, and I don't mind if these movies are maybe not perfect. I just like to be in a certain universe. Same thing with The Hobbit. Lots of fans don't like The Hobbit movies. I really like them because it gives me an opportunity to spend some extra time in Middle Earth. So, yeah. All right. Let's see. What else can I talk about? There's one other movie that I'm currently watching. But before I get to that, I would like to talk about books.
Why are you wearing glasses?
Reading.
Reading?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know you could read.
What was your favorite book when you were in primary school? Think about it. There was, for almost everyone, has a book that they remember more than any other story that they read. For me, my favorite book that I read, I don't know, maybe 100 times, I just read it over and over and over and over again, was Charlie and the Chocolate Factory by Roald Dahl. That was number one. Number two was The Wizard of Oz. Those two books, and then later on it was The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings, but I was much older, so I was 12 years. But when I was like around 8 years old, I think, I already read Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. And ever since I read that for the first time, it became my all-time favorite story. I became a huge fan of Roald Dahl. I was super excited to see that there's this one movie that won an Oscar, I think, and it was based on the incredible story of Henry Sugar, which also was one of my favorite Roald Dahl stories. It's, I think, on Prime, maybe. I don't know. Anyway, so Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, loved the book. And I only saw the movie at a very late stage in my life. I think I was already in seminary. Or maybe I was already in the second part of my priestly formation back in the Netherlands when I was able to rent it on DVD. I'd never seen it. Never, it was never on TV. And it was so strange because the movie was so different from how I had always imagined the world of Willy Wonka. And I didn't like it that much. I didn't like the Oompa Loompas. I didn't like the fact that it was a musical. Even the chocolate factory on the inside looked so bad compared to what it looked like in my imagination. And you have to keep in mind, I had read the book dozens of times. So I could dream every scene in the book, and then seeing the movie with Gene Wilder and everything, it's like, no, it looks so, so subpar. And still, up until this day, I think it's okay, but I really much prefer reading the book over watching the movie. Now, this may be blasphemy for a lot of you who grew up seeing the Gene Wilder movie, maybe never read the book, but for me as a book lover, this is one of the few times that I actually really, really am a purist. The book is so much better than the movie. Then came the new reboot, the Willy Wonka movie of, what was it, like 10 years ago by Tim Burton with, what's his name? The guy from Pirates of the Caribbean. I'm blanking out on the name. Anyway, and I hated that movie. I so hated it. It was so... Johnny Depp, thank you. The Johnny Depp movie was terrible. The special effects, of course, were much better. The factory looked a lot cooler than in the original movie with Gene Wilder. But this Willy Wonka that just channeled some kind of creepy Michael Jackson-like... Ew! It was so awful. Like... I've watched the movie, I think, twice. And it was such a cringe experience. Absolutely the worst movie they ever made on the basis of that story. In comparison to the Johnny Depp version, I thought the Gene Wilder movie was amazing. And then came this last year's Wonka. And it was... positioned as a prequel where we would see the young Willy Wonka, which of course I know wasn't written by Roald Dahl. Roald Dahl wrote a sequel, which we've never seen for some reason, which is crazy, which I think was called The Glass Elevator, at least in the Dutch version, which was a good story. It wasn't as good as the first book, but I still enjoyed it very much. And for some reason, they never bothered making a movie out of that, which... I don't understand why. Anyway, the Wonka prequel was inspired by Roald Dahl's story, but it was made up, was written by someone else. And so I started, when it was in movie theaters, I didn't go to the movies because I heard it was a musical, and I saw the trailer, and I thought it was okay. It looked nice, definitely much better than the Johnny Depp movie. But I didn't care that much for the musical aspect of it. I don't know why. And so I waited until it was available on HBO Max. And I started watching the first half hour to 45 minutes of the movie. And then I was like, I like this, but I don't love it. It's okay. It's nice to see the backstory of Willy Wonka, but I don't care for the songs. I thought it was a little bit too childish to a certain extent. But then I discovered that there was also a book based on the screenplay, and I started reading the book, and oh my goodness. Wow, that was so amazing. Reading the the book, and I know it's based on the screenplay, so it's very close to what you see in a movie, but reading it brought me immediately back to that 8-year-old Roderick who was sitting in the library permanently claiming the book. So for the, in the library, I had a subscription to my local library, and you had to take the book, read it, and bring it back. And you only had 3 weeks to read a book, I think. And if you brought it back later, you had to pay 25 cents per week that you brought it in late. What I did is I brought it back, and I sat in the library. I remember this very vividly. So you bring it back to the counter, and the lady takes the book. And I was just sitting in a place I was would read other books, but I would constantly monitor the lady. And the moment she picked up the Charlie and the Chocolate Factory book, put it on her little, tray with the wheels to bring it back to the bookshelves. The moment she had placed it back in the bookshelves, I would take it and I would check it out again. And I did that for 2 years. And I'm not sure, but I wouldn't be surprised if they also noticed that I was constantly claiming the book. No other kid could read it. We only had one copy of each book in the library. It was a small town where I lived. But I just, this was at the time that I didn't have an allowance or anything, so I didn't own the book myself. But reading the Wonka book was exactly what I hoped for. This felt like I was reading an original Roald Dahl story. Everything was right about that book. And the best part is there were no songs. This was not a musical. There was no dancing. There were a few descriptions, but most of the choreography in the movie was just skipped over. And what then remains is a very good story. A very similar in tone, in humor, in style to Roald Dahl's book. What an amazing experience. I never thought that at this age in my life, this stage in my life, I would be able to relive the experience of reading a Charlie and the Chocolate, Willy Wonka-related story. It was amazing. And now I've tried to watch the rest of the movie, but now I'm constantly comparing it to the book. It's like, oh, I liked it better in my imagination. Yeah, it's okay. It's not bad. It's fun. Yeah, sure, the songs are okay. But seriously, can we go to the rest of the story? And it just, it doesn't have the same emotional impact on me. Now, of course, I'm an adult, so it's a different experience, but I think just, this is a story that needs to be read. It requires your imagination, and even though with special effects, it all looked really wonderful, no complaints there, it's nice, I like it, but I love the version in my mind, in my imagination, so much more. And with that, we've come to the end of this episode of The Break. There will be an Easter episode coming soon to your feed. And of course, if you are a patron of mine, then you can listen to the longer version that is posted every week in the special personalized podcast feed that I have for my patrons. So take a look at patreon.com/FatherRoderick. If you want to hear me talk about the Back to the Future board game that I played the other day, and why shirts are buttoned differently for men's shirts and women's shirts. I finally solved that riddle. And then I want to talk about the Dungeons & Dragons Lego set. All that and more coming up in my premium version of The Break. Again, for all my patrons over at patreon.com/FatherRoderick. Thank you so much for the privilege of your time. Have a wonderful Holy Week, and we'll check in soon before Easter. I promise. Have a wonderful rest of your week. God bless.